Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this podcast episode, for 44 years, Seattle Colleges has presented an annual community celebration of the life and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. This year, the keynote address was presented by an educator, musician, and community organizer named Benjamin Hunter. He titled his talk, Make America Again. Hunter is the founder of Community Arts Creates, an organization that promotes the arts as a bridge to community, and the co-founder of the Hillman City Collaboratory, a social change incubator. We're presenting Mr. Hunter's address by itself here. You'll find our recording of the entire event on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a distinct honor to be here amongst so many fine people. It's been a pleasure to listen to all the children speak and everybody's words. My work revolves around looking to the past. As a musician, I play music from 100 years ago, blues and jazz and ragtime and folk songs, songs that tell stories about what's going on around us. That was the form of entertainment. We sang and danced for each other. That's how we connected. The Black and Tan Hall is a revival of a club that existed from 22 to 66 and was the premier jazz club along Jackson Street, which was the color line for musicians. The Collaboratory requires that we have an open ear to everybody that walks through the door and an open heart to listen to who they are and what they are and where they come from. Preparing for something like this brings me back to those that have spoken on this issue before me in another place or another period of time. The philosophies and thoughts from every elder before us who's watched and witnessed the ebb and flow of a nation created. The smell of the air and the sound of the wind and even the taste of things enhances or fades with the evolutions and devolutions of a growing society. I think of all of them and I say thank you. This country itself was founded at the dawn of a new period. The Age of Reason, it was called. The Enlightenment, placing reason as the prime motivator for action, helping determine our current society through ideals of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Helping determine our country as a place for tolerance, equality, and freedom. Fundamentally, that we are all treated as rational beings, that we all have the ability to self-determine, to have an identity, and allow that to shape our lives with the mold that fancies our passions and our talents and our skills. To be an individual, to think for ourselves, to work for ourselves, to live for ourselves. But right out of the gate, America engaged in the same type of social behavior from whence they came. Slavery and indentured servitude built this nation into the prosperous country that it is. This is fundamental when exploring the psyche of American politics and society, I believe, because it identifies at the root the hypocrisy that this country was founded on. And while racism is a towering problem in this country and around the world, racism is implicitly folded into a larger discussion of class. This is what Dr. King spoke of, because we aren't just fighting a war on racism, we are fighting for justice in all forms of oppression. And since the formation of this country wasn't just blacks and Native Americans getting trampled on, but anyone who wasn't rich, who wasn't white, who wasn't male. And so since has the entire narrative been written from the perspective of. Alongside that narrative is this position of power and of privilege, so much so that it disallows us, even now in 2017, the idea of putting anything other than white and male within that envelope of power. So that when we elect a black president, we can shout out to the world how evolved we are, how progressive we are, the example that should be followed from the land of the free, yet we can still lock up people of color at rates far, far higher than whites. We close down schools in low-income neighborhoods. We chalk up the price of good, healthy food and allow the poor to feast on McDonald's and Pepsi. Our establishment has never wanted to accept any other group as powerful for fear that it would defy the supposed truth that has been portrayed for hundreds of years. And as the decades go by, subtle and not so subtle tricks and tactics develop to curtail, disrupt, denigrate, and dismantle any movement that looks to empower themselves, because sharing power is not the American way. So when you tell people that they have self-determination, that they have an identity, that they can think and work and live for themselves, except when they're black or a woman or gay or poor, you insert into that person's psyche or those persons the same kind of psychological disregard for each other. You instill inside them that same insidiousness, that same apathy, that same disregard. That power can't be shared, but I can still exist as an individual. This is what I see as our biggest folly. This is what I regard as our primary concern. You see, because it's more than race or gender or even class. It comes down to a position that has been curated by 500 years of false advertising, that individuality will give us life, liberty, and happiness, that capitalist self-determination will somehow produce a tolerant and united society. We built this nation only considering a small portion of the people that were a part of it. And now, we are grappling with that fundamental flaw so much so that we don't know how to acknowledge each other. And that the mechanism for bringing us together has pulled us apart. All of this technology has pulled us so far apart that we now find more solace in talking to Siri than to a real person. I don't have Siri. I don't do that. We'd rather hear stories from our friends on Facebook and through Twitter than through actual conversation and dialogue. We can't acknowledge people if we don't know how to talk to them. We can't empathize with people if we only rely on emoticons. Our senses, I believe, are the only thing we have to guide us through this world. Instead, we've traded them in for an algorithm. We've put our trust in a robot of whose purpose is to give us what we want so that all we know is getting what we want. We play video games that immerse us in war so that we no longer have the perspective of a civilian. Our relationships are through a virtual reality that feeds our selfishness over our selflessness. It draws on our need to consume unnecessary products and things over soulful and enlightening conversation. This emphasis on consumption affects the most vulnerable of our minds, the most absorbent of minds, the most malleable of minds, those of our children. We are what we see, and if this is what we feed our children, then what else can we possibly expect out of them? Are they not our future? Are they not our hopes and our dreams? Are they not our legacy? What is the legacy of our children? And so, what is the legacy of the United States? I bring up acknowledgement because we don't know how to talk to each other anymore. We don't know how to have differing opinions without callousness. We don't know how to engage in debate without our teeth exposed. And so, now we're out for blood. Yet we're supposed to be collectively striving for a better America for everyone. Dr. King understood this on a profound level. He was a fierce opponent of the Vietnam War for not just what it did to our veterans, but also for that false advertising, promoting freedom by having people who are not free in America kill others that are not free elsewhere. He said, "And as I ponder the madness of Vietnam and search within myself for ways to understand and respond in compassion, my mind goes constantly to the people of that peninsula. I speak now not of the soldiers of each side, not of the ideologies of the Liberation Front, not of the junta in Saigon, but simply of the people who have been living under the curse of war for almost three continuous decades now. I think of them, too, because it is clear to me that there will be no meaningful solution there until some attempt is made to know them and hear their broken cries." But are we not still caught up in that same war? Today, in the Middle East, in parts of Africa, in North Dakota, in Baltimore. And so to acknowledge means that we must alter our system of values. Our current values are money and power. Our wars are based on money and power. Much of what our government does has a bottom line, and it is what our social policy is based on, our environmental policy is based on, our educational policy is what it's based on. And if our policies are for the benefit of our country, through whom power is defined as rich, white, and male, how do we expect to create policy that is equitable and fair? The first step of our mighty revolution must start with a redefinition of the values of our American and global polity. We must draw lines in the sand and say, you cannot and will not cross these lines. To cross these lines goes against our collective humanity. To cross these lines goes against the sanctity of our creed as Americans. And to do this isn't easy. To do this is to go against a machine that was built and has been over and over recalibrated to combat our collectivism, to combat our empathy and connection and reliance and trust in one another. To do this, we must challenge the system with which we live, but we must challenge it going back to our founding. The building blocks that our founding fathers were determined to construct this country with were fundamentally sound: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Built on reason. It wasn't that our individuality was better than our collective, but that our collective was made stronger through our distinctness and our uniqueness, and that our love for each other would fortify that individuality. And so we have come to the precipice that is our now. We have come to that moment where another period must start and we must recalibrate. The fierce urgency of now is upon us, and it requires the only type of force that can withstand the mechanisms of division. And that force must be love. Don't get it twisted. This love isn't unicorns and pink roses. And it's not just holding hands or singing songs. This love is backbone. This love is fire. This love is a juggernaut. This love is a steel chain linking our histories, our cultures, our colors, and our futures. Dr. King said, "When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I am not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I am speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life." I read this quote over and over because something about it seemed absolutely right and true, but also very unsettling. The supreme unifying principle of life, all the great religions. I met up with a friend last night who talked to me about growing up Muslim. He said, there are 1.5 billion Muslims, some brown, some black, some men, some women, and they're all fighting each other. If we could all just decide to join hands, we could do anything. Why is it so hard for us to harness this love, this supreme unifying principle of life? I went to South Dakota in September with my sweetheart to bring food and supplies and stand in solidarity with Standing Rock. Over 200 sovereign nations coming together to support each other, to protect each other, to protect the water. We spent the days working, organizing donations and lending a hand where we were needed, and spent the night around a great fire, listening to stories and songs, watching dances, and being part of this unifying principle, this unwavering force of love. A love that worked together and stood side by side to protect what's sacred, a love that laughed, sang, and danced together to feed what's sacred, a love that welcomed anybody that believed in the values of that love, in that spirit that we share with one another. When we say we need to change our values, we are engaging in a commitment to establishing better relationships, a relationship with ourselves, our neighbors, our earth, and our sky. Our love must be a relationship fortified by our senses, to see the valleys and the mountains, to look into each other's eyes, to taste the spices and flavors that make up our vast collection of cultures from the diverse regions around the world, to listen to the wind and the thunder, to hear our voices and rhythms and music, to feel the warmth of the sun or the soft morning rain, to feel the touch of a loved one or a stranger, to smell the flowers, the food, or even just a person's scent. Our love must be rooted in our senses because that is how we acknowledge each other. That is how we acknowledge this earth. Our country must be founded on the idea that we all count. At the moment, only a few count, but it's not because we don't have the capacity to love, but that we've been groomed not to. We must make America again, in the way that it was meant to be. The how is the tough part, but it can be done in many ways within our current system and outside of it. Already there are people and groups developing new ways to coexist instead of the rising cost of isolation many apartment complexes provide. Novel ways to run business so that more people have ownership of their work. Creative alternatives to teach and learn so that people and children don't fall in the cracks of a school system that don't meet their needs. Revisiting traditional farming techniques that yield organic, healthy food that take care of our land and reinstill pride and respect to our farmers. These things are all done outside of our government. They are creating new systems. These things are being done by grassroots efforts by small communities thinking of new ideas to tackle these systems of oppression. At the same time, there are more women and people of color in state and national office than ever before, allowing more voices and representation in our government because we need black and brown brothers and sisters in office. We need LGBTQ people in office. We need people in office that represent our constituency, or else that power remains rich, male, and white. And it's important that we marry both of these strategies. It's important that we organize and rally beside each other. It's important that we express ourselves and be heard, that we engage in activities and hobbies that pique our interests and passions while also advancing our independent and collective culture. And it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be angry. Rather, it's important to be angry to remind us that we have souls and minds and hearts and self-determination. Dr. King said, "These are the times for real choices and not false ones. We are at the moment when our lives must be placed on the line if our nation is to survive its own folly. Every man of humane convictions must decide on the protest that best suits his or her convictions, but we must all protest." We need to stop looking down. We need to stop looking at our screens or allowing our headphones to deafen us from the sounds around us. We must be aware to be alive. And we must acknowledge to be acknowledged. I want to end on the inspiration for this speech with a poem by Langston Hughes. "Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great song, that great strong land of love, where never kings connive, nor tyrant's scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark, and who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I'm the poor, white, fooled, and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek, and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient, endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I'm the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I'm the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today despite the dream, beaten yet today. Oh, pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned. That's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lea, and torn from black Africa's strand, I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strike, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be, the land where every man is free. The land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose. The steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again. America. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we, the people, must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain, all the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Thank you so much.
That's it for this podcast of Speakers Forum, featuring a keynote address by Benjamin Hunter. He spoke at Seattle College's 44th annual community celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. on January 13th, 2017, at Mount Zion Baptist Church. Tune in again soon.